This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
We're back live from Benchmark in Old Town with more of the Score's big game broadcast featuring Mully and Haw, Bernstein and Holmes with Layla Rahimi, and the Parkins and Spiegel Show, presented by Circa Sports Illinois on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
You don't have to get complicated. Look at Trent Williams, T-Rock.
I'm so happy for him.
Brandon Ayuk's going to his first Super Bowl.
Come on.
Christian McCaffrey's going to his first Super Bowl. Brock Purdy's going to his first Super Bowl. Just back up here, Brock. Take one or two steps back. Back up. Go down. It's over. The Niners are going to Vegas.
Okay. That's KNBR's call of the 49ers' victory in the NFC Championship game. And you are listening to the Circa Illinois Big Game Watch Party at Benchmark in Old Town.
Woo!
Look at this.
Yeah.
What more do you want here? Mike Mulligan is here. Parkins and Spiegel are here. Layla Rahimi, Lawrence Holmes. We have a guy that looks like Luke Getsy who walked in.
Yeah, he looks like Luke Getsy.
I know. I thought it was.
It's been weirding me out the whole show.
I thought it was.
And that guy right there looks like Luke
Sir,
Getsy.
Sir, you're in a blue Circa hat. You're sitting close to us with a hat on. You're standing
Yeah,
right
there he is.
Why
didn't you tailor the offense to Justin Fields? What's wrong
why
with you?
Why did you make Robert Tonyan go deep? I just want to know. Why wasn't he blocking more? Okay, I'm not doing this.
I'm going off script here. I'm ignoring this.
Wow.
Because I was thinking of something. I was going to ask something last segment, but I thought I'd save it. What is the very first Super Bowl that you actually remember watching?
I got
not
one.
That you were told about, not that you saw on NFL films that feels like you might have seen. What for sure? Do you remember it being a special day? Do you remember going somewhere or being just knowing that this was a big deal and understanding it was a big deal?
I just remember being conscious that it was a big game that my parents and their friends were watching when Craig Morton was quarterbacking the Denver Broncos against the Dallas Cowboys. And I remember being told that he used to be a cowboy, right? He was a former...
He was a Texan, right? A Dallas Texan?
Okay, maybe so.
No, more than one, but, no,
but it had a revenge aspect to it. But and then I picked up a couple other things along the way. Eventually, I was gifted with a Randy Gratishar T-shirt jersey because of my affection for the Broncos that was created during that game.
For the Orange Crush.
Yes.
Super Bowl 20. I mean, that was it. Like I love Jim McMahon so much so that we weren't buying jerseys, but my mother made one for me, like iron on number 9. I used to wear the headband and the sunglasses, and I just remember, like, we had basically, like, a watch party, and it was just, you know, me, my dad, my brother, my grandfather, and my mom, but she made chili that day, and it was terrific, and then by the time that you sit down and eat the chili, the game was over, you know, like, it was, because it just ended so fast. Like, as a child, there wasn't a lot that brought me to, like, euphoria as a sports fan. Like, the Kirk Gibson's home run, like, I remember that, like, being a big moment for me as a sports fan. But in 86, man, like, that was – you talk about, like, your guy. Like, that was your guy. Like, McMahon was my guy. Like, I loved Walter Payton. I loved to watch Willie Gault. So that's the first one where I can remember sitting down and watching it and laughing and having, like, a wonderful time. And just being like, man, this team is as good as everyone thought they were going to be, and they stomped on people's heads. It was very fun.
28 for me. You know, growing up in Dallas and being a Cowboys fan, that was probably the one where I had, like, the most collective memories, and or at least the first one of the most collective memories. And then just being absolutely devastated when they were down 21-0 in the 49ers in the championship game the next year. And my dad is a 49ers fan, which sucks. And so Cowboys-Niners was always like the sacred cow of that run. So for me, it was definitely 28 and then not watching 29 and then watching 30. And obviously 29 has some symmetry now. But, yeah, that's it for me. It was 28.
I know it's not Super Bowl 20 for you. That would be a pretty special memory.
No, yeah. I mean,
it's a big one, though, in his life.
I know it is.
It is the biggest Super Bowl in my life.
No doubt.
It's why I'm here, thanks to that halftime show. But, wow. Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Was it up with people? Is that what they blew off?
It sure was. Yeah. It sure was. I just really appreciate them sharing that with me.
Yeah.
You know, the Cowboys-Bills Super Bowl that was the blowout, is that 28, 52-17?
That was 27.
Okay, that was the first, yeah, because it was the first one for sure.
30-13 was 28.
When I was a kid, I was a Cowboys fan because I thought that, like, I thought your team was supposed to be the biggest team because of the Bulls and the Cubs. I just have to root for the team that everybody cares about. And the Bears were awful, and my dad is a Packers fan, and my mom is a Chiefs fan, so I didn't have a Bears influence in my house when I was a little kid. And so I was like, well, obviously I'm going to root for the best team because the Bulls are the best team. And so when the Cowboys were in that run at the beginning, I was a huge Cowboys fan when I was like 7, 8, 9 years old. And yeah, I mean, that was the first memory of, like, my team won the Super Bowl, but I picked them because they were in the Super Bowl. I was 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. First Super Bowl party I remember was Packers-Patriots, and because my older brother Brad was at the game in New Orleans, and I thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
Desmond Howard kickoff return?
Yeah, yeah, and then my buddy, we were playing, like, Nerf football with, like, footballs like these in the basement, and my buddy Dajus just went through a mirror with his shoulder, and he just shattered a mirror in our house. It was a pretty incredible tackle.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we were playing basement football. It was great. So, yeah, those are my earliest Super Bowl memories. Been gambling ever since.
I remember the Dolphins, so that's like
73.
Two,
was the Gary Premian against Washington?
Yes. Well, that was the over-the-hill gang, right? Mm-hmm. Washington, George... who is the coach?
Allen.
George Allen, who used to coach for the Bears. George Allen.
Great coach.
The last time the Bears won a championship before they started their run, George Allen was the defensive guy. He was really the coach. Halas technically gets credit. You talk to anybody that was on that team, it was all George Allen. But that's I remember the first Super Bowl I covered was San Francisco. I think it was 94? 95, something like that. They had a kicker, okay? His name was Doug Bryan. Do you remember this guy? Little guy.
Was that against the Chargers?
I think it was.
That was the Stan Humphries Chargers.
I don't remember.
This would be the Natrone
game. That was my first Bryan, Super Bowl party.
Yeah, Doug Bryan looks like Brock Purdy does right now. Brock Purdy is so young-looking, it's beyond belief. You know, he looks like he's in high school, and that's how Doug Bryan looked. They were out. He comes back to the hotel. They wouldn't let him in because he didn't look. He clearly wasn't a football player, and he kept claiming to be the kicker. And they wouldn't let him back in the hotel, and they had to like call somebody to come down. Yeah, that's our kicker. And the guy got back into the hotel. It's just a classic. And I wonder to myself, you know, instead of asking Brock Purdy, you know, do you look like Lee Harvey Oswald, someone ought to say to him, did you hear it? They asked that question this week. Someone ought to just say to him, like, yeah, you can't come in here.
Does he look like Lee Harvey Oswald, or does he look like a young Dave Gahan, the lead singer of Depeche Mode?
Oh, that's pretty good.
Is that how you say it?
I think so.
I thought it was Gahan.
I thought it was Gahan, too.
Is it Gahan? I don't know.
I don't know.
I know the cartoonist was Gahan Wilson is how he pronounced it.
So the fact that a football game can end with a guy like Doug Bryan
deciding it.
Deciding it.
Is sad.
Is one of the deeply incorrect things about this sport.
It's so true.
Our friend Boog Shambi. I know, but like our friend Boog Shambi, I was talking about it with him, and he's like, it'd be like ending a baseball game with trivia. You know, like it's just so random.
Yeah, these guys are ripping each other's faces off. They're stepping on each other's nuts.
But then because.
And then this guy comes trotting out.
Because the game is called football, we need this like 5'6, 170 pound dude to decide the game. It's absurd.
Larry David
says. If
you were
on the Bears, he'd be setting the edge.
Larry David says no kickers.
I'm with that.
You should, like, punters, fine for field position, but. No kickoffs, no field goals, no extra points.
I mean, it decided the Bills and Chiefs game, for God's sake.
Yep.
The first ever football game played in this country was, I don't know, I think it was Rutgers against
Princeton.
And they had nowhere, like they took the train, the other players met them, they all went out drinking, and then they played this game the next day. They went to a pool hall. I mean, who knows what happened. It's considered the first rugby game ever played in this country, the first professional football game or football game, and the first soccer game. Can you imagine what that looked like? And that's how you got stuck with a kicker. That's my new belief now.
Is it really considered the first soccer game
and
rugby,
God,
all of them?
All those things. That's considered the start of the sport in this country for all three sports.
I will square the circle here with my first Super Bowl in memory was Super Bowl XI. Was the John Madden Raiders beating the Purple People Eater Vikings.
He's older than you.
And remembering that it was a big deal. And part of the reason was the 76 season. That was in January 77. And the 76 season was the first time we started to realize this Walter Payton guy might be something.
Mm.
And it changed the way we watched Bears games. Because like, oh, this kid out of this small school. Whoa, is he doing what we think he's doing? And there were moments where that was the first year where it became appointment viewing to just watch 34. And then I started collecting football cards, and I started and then it just exploded from there. But that was the first time I'm like, we are sitting down and watching the Super Bowl and asking, are the Bears ever going to be in the Super Bowl? What will it take to get the Bears
here? Do you remember how the gymnastics of him? If he got knocked out of bounds, he would just whoop, like he would just throw himself on the air and he'd land. You never saw anything like it. And that's why Peyton at the goal line is still one of the greatest plays in the NFL ever seen.
And
my God.
I always say this because, you know, my dad was a high school classmate of Gale Sayers.
Oh.
And has followed his whole career, and they were friendly.
Where was that? In Kansas?
Omaha Central.
And, so then he went to Kansas?
Well, yeah, despite the fact that there were some recruiting inducements that were provided from members of my family.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Gail had a summer job working for my grandfather.
Bernsteins have been paying off people.
Nebraska football for long. You better believe it.
Throwing money at the problem for decades.
Better believe it. And then he went to Kansas, so they did something wrong. But they, when the comments used to be made about that, he's doing stuff we haven't seen since Sayers.
Right.
That's when everyone's like, well, wait a second here. Because that's a legend, you know, just burned as bright as anyone ever burned here in sports.
Right.
And when those comps started coming in, everybody was paying attention.
So did you guys see that Jarrett Payton crashed the Michael Jackson event in Las Vegas last night?
He's been living his best life out there.
Oh, he's having a great time. And we'll see him on the field today. For the Man of the Year Award, and I know you guys talked to him the other day. Dude brought his own hat and his own glove to the Michael Jackson dance event.
I mean, or they gave him one.
No, he said he brought his own.
He always carries one just in case.
I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
He said he brought his own. Dude stole the show for a little while. There are some incredible moves, and it begs the question, did he know Michael Jackson when he was a kid? Because everybody knew Walter Payton. Jared told us a story.
Right. Jared told us a story. On the list of people you want to know when you're a kid.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I might have phrased that poorly.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jared went to the White House. He left Barrington grade school and went to the White House one day. You know? So it's like, it was his life. But I thought the dancing chops were incredible.
Well, he does a lot of that on Channel 9. Like, it's kind of become, like, the thing when he does his morning show hit. Like he'll dance at home, and then
That's right, I have seen that.
And then
the
like,
Benny cameos and the Chuck videos have been
does
amazing.
Does he eat rim
amazing.
At home as well?
How about
I'll leave that to you.
How about
Super Bowl?
How about Walter on Soul Train? You remember that clip? Walter
hand
made
jive.
That
yes.
Oh, that was awesome.
He's popping
you know
and locking.
Yeah.
One of the ways that jive. Like if
he's
you grew up,
and locking.
If you grew up outside of here, one of the ways that you realized how immense Walter Payton's present was I remember Oprah talking about how people would just address on a letter. They'd say Sweetness, Chicago, Illinois, and it would get to him. Oh. And I thought that was the most, I was like, that's
they'd bring it.
It
to the
You're
hill.
Bigger than the post office.
Oh man.
You don't even need an address.
That's phenomenal.
I'm like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
So I want to get back to John Madden. And Dan Pompey wrote an incredible piece this week about quarterback head coach combos.
Yes.
Trying to put Mahomes and Andy Reid in perspective. And he kind of went through all the different relationships between Bart Starr and Lombardi and Brady and Belichick and so many more. But the one he said that was the most similar was John Madden and Kenny Stabler, where Madden let Kenny Stabler be himself, be creative, be a little bit wild and free on the field because he knew that was how he got the best out of Kenny Stabler. And I thought that was fascinating, going back to what we were talking about, how part of Andy Reid's genius is to allow his players' personalities to be part of their
That's
game.
Interesting, because after Madden retired, they traded him.
Stabler?
Straight up for Dan Pastorini.
You're right.
If my
so
memory
so
is
maybe
correct.
They knew that nobody else could bring out what Madden brought out in Stabler.
We have a lot more to come from Benchmark. 1510 North Wells in Old Town. It's the Circa Illinois Big Game Watch Party at Benchmark. When we come back, we already heard what Lawrence had to say about Bears Super Bowl memories.
Mm.
We've only got two of them to remember. But we can do so when we come back on The Score.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
We're back live from Benchmark in Old Town with more of The Score's Big Game broadcast featuring Mully and Haw, Bernstein and Holmes with Layla Rahimi, and the Parkins and Spiegel Show, presented by Circa Sports Illinois on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Vinatieri on the approach, flat falls, popping here in Miami. It sails to the far side around the 8-yard line to Hester. Under it and to the middle with the 15 to the 20, breaks free of the 25 to the 30, to the outside, 40, midfield, 40, 30 of the Colts, 20, 15, Hester 5, oh, touchdown Bears!
No way!
A fast start delivered by the Windy City Flyer, the man they called anytime down here in Miami. Riviera Beach, Florida, to the big stage, the biggest in professional sports. Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
And it was all seashells and balloons from then on.
It was a score game into the fourth quarter.
It was after the
one score game
touchdown. But you were wondering now, boy, if only I could see what's going on. It sounds like so much fun that they're having at the Circa Illinois Big Game Watch Party at Benchmark in Old Town. Well, you can see twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score, right there. There's a camera. You can see us. We're here. You can come out and join us, and then it's even easier to see us if you're standing right here.
Yeah.
See, that's how it works. Don't forget, too, when we get done at 3, the official pregame is going to start on our airwaves, kickoff at 5:30. The Super Bowl can be heard exclusively on Chicago's 670 The Score or with the free Odyssey app. The Bears have been in two Super Bowls. I know, Lawrence, you shared your memories of the first one.
I also covered the other one,
and
Dan.
The other one, you were
We were
talking.
There together.
Yes, indeed. I left before the game, though.
Yes. After that, I was there for 9 days.
After that Friday show that was that, will
there,
probably never be topped.
Look, there's nothing better as far as Super Bowl memories go. Our Friday 5 o'clock Bears hit with me and Zach is my most cherished radio memory. Zach and I, by that point, were absolutely delusional.
Punchy.
Like, we were, we had been there 3 days before you guys even got there. And then I was traveling back and forth to Fort Lauderdale where, you know, I was having the head coach of the Colts lie to me about what he was going to do on the kickoff. And then we get to the Friday, and that Friday was Lovie Pittsburgh. It was...
That's right. It was Mo Rocca.
It was Lovie Pittsburgh, Mo Rocca, Prince.
Amanda Beard.
And then the 5 o'clock Bears hit with you guys and Amanda Beard and Zach flirting with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and wasn't Friday the day that we were hitting on Matt Hasselbeck's mom, too?
What?
Yeah, we were perving on his mom.
Well, it was a different era.
How do you reenact the show based on all of this?
No, like they were doing like the chunky soup at, and she came and sat down, and she was super nice. She was really, really nice. And she like went with, we were like having fun, and she went with a bit. And then I think Matt got up, and he was like, I've had quite enough of this.
Yeah, if you remember, he was recovering from surgery.
That's right.
And he had this massive contraption propping up his arm because he was having this full like AC joint repair being done. So he's got this complex network of like trusses
and
on. And he's trying to get out of the chair
and
angrily.
You guys are hitting on
his
mom.
Like, your mom's hot.
So it was kind of a crazy day. And then you get to that hit and you guys, like, we were playing sound and stuff, and it's like, it was so ridiculous, and Abatacola's there, and Goff was on the board just hitting us with every possible drop.
Yeah, and Terry was just completely, he was oblivious half the time to the fact that he was on the air, because people would be walking by, like, hey, there's my guy. It's like, Terry, they can't see you. They don't know what
Well, he was doing the show for the Sports Monster in Tampa. Or whatever it was.
That was different.
There was the
different,
lady.
Different Super Bowl.
There was the really, was it Amanda Nunes, the really nice Hooters girl that was just sitting there eating donuts with all
yeah,
of us?
She wouldn't leave.
It was great. Like, it was, that was astounding. Like, that Super Bowl experience was really astounding. And then you get to the game part. And I told the story a little bit on Friday. Like, I'm in the back of the room when Prince does this press conference where no one thinks he's going to answer questions.
That is the thing I am perhaps most envious of anything any of you have ever done.
I got to see Prince in a room with 200 people.
Because he played. Yeah. He played.
And he just like, was like, oh, yeah, I'm totally answer your questions, guys.
Yeah, they came out and they announced there's been a rumor that Prince won't talk. He's willing to answer any questions. And a guy asked him like a legitimate question about why he wouldn't talk, and he just...
He turned around.
He answered with the guitar, and then they did, like, three songs.
Yep.
And he had the... They called them the twins. They were the girls part of his show. It was... My wife is home with our three children, and I called, and I just held up my phone so she could hear the little concert. You're right in front of Prince.
It was amazing. And then he was like, see y'all at the Super Bowl, and he walks off.
Incredible.
But I remember, like, before that, the people that were running the convention center were like, all of the bathrooms are offline. Like, you can't, like, Prince has got control of the entire space that's here. And then you go, and I was mesmerized. Like,
it's incredible.
I was sitting in the back of the room, just my mouth agape, because I was like, this is my favorite artist of all time. And I'm in a room with 200 people watching him rock out. And knowing that I was going to get to see him again at the Super Bowl.
In the rain.
In the rain. And the
singing Purple Rain in the rain.
The director told the story to Rich Eisen where he was saying that what they were concerned about is that the rain was causing this kind of purpley smoke to come off the lights,
and that worked.
And they said to Prince, like, "Hey, you know, it's raining. You know, we're really sorry." And he's like,
"Well, there was also they said that the
Mylar floor,
right? It was super slippery even when it was dry,
right?"
And Prince was like, "Can you make it rain harder?"
That's awesome.
And so, you know, I go from that to being the last person in the convention center because the Score did a pregame show. I made it to the stadium right as the ball was being kicked off.
And you see Devin Hester.
And you see Devin Hester do that thing after Tony Dungy had told me all week.
That they weren't going to kick.
And then, you know.
Told everyone that.
Yep. Yeah. Cause, and then I found out, you know, I confronted him last year about it.
You
on football night in Chicago. I confronted him. I was like, you lied to me. And he's like, I've been reading the Bible, and there was this verse about fear, and we didn't want to be afraid. And so we changed it last minute and decided to kick to him. And then, of course, he has one of the most historic Super Bowl moments of all time.
Where's your Messiah now? Yeah.
God is a terrible game
right? We had also talked about a little bit about Super Bowl 20 and the memories there. If somebody's young enough to really have not appreciated what the run-up to that game was, I was reminded of it when I was going through some old Sports Illustrateds of mine from that year. They're in terrific shape. I was surprised how good they look. The Sports Illustrated cover, that week before the game, the headline, anybody remember it? Chicago's D spells doom for the Patriots. Yeah. That was the cover of Sports Illustrated, was a picture of Mike Singletary, a diagram of the 46 defense, yeah, with X's and O's except a refrigerator in place of number 72, a tiny little refrigerator icon. And that was the cover of SI basically saying, this game's over. And the inevitability of it, the coronation, the absolute inevitability of it, yeah, there was never a doubt.
It was because it wasn't the Dolphins, right?
Is that, yes, Squish the Fish was the Patriots,
right,
thing. The
wasn't
Dolphins,
that the thing?
Yeah, because the Dolphins had
Dolphins beat
them.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So that would not have been the storyline going into that game,
no,
if the
no.
If the Dolphins would have beaten the Patriots.
It would have been, right, a rematch.
It would have been colossal.
Right, okay.
So I have a question. So you spoke last segment.
I just want to say one thing. When you talk about the popularity of that Super Bowl and what it meant and all that, I was in Metro the night before the game. And at the time, they just had TVs top to bottom, and they would play stuff on these televisions. I mean, there were probably like 90 televisions on an entire wall. And they played the Super Bowl Shuffle, and everyone stopped and just started screaming and cheering for the
at
Bears.
At Metro Sports?
At Metro. Not, no, Metro.
The Rock Club.
Where
the
Smart
Metro,
Bar, yeah, is in the basement.
Oh,
the Metro.
Oh.
And they played that song. Everybody went crazy.
Wow.
And we were like, oh, my God, this is bigger than anything that's happened in Chicago that I can recall.
That's amazing. Well, Mully, help me with this then, because Bernsie talked about the specter of Walter Payton and how everybody knew he was great, and can the Bears win a Super Bowl? So then there they are winning the Super Bowl, and they have this chance to keep piling it on and rubbing in, and Ditka gives the ball to the fridge, yeah, instead of Walter Payton. Right, can you dispel whatever myths there are about that?
I can tell you that I was at a party with a bunch of dudes. We were watching the game, and Walter fumbles early in the game, and somebody throws an empty beer can at the screen and jumps up and says, of course they're not going to win. They got that old man. They got that loser. He's lost his whole career. And storms out of the room, and we're all sitting there like, oh, my God, like the curse of Payton has somehow hit the Bears.
Oh.
I mean, that happened.
After Tony Franklin bangs it through
then,
for the 3-0
and
lead.
And then literally by the end of the game, it's like, oh, get Walter his touchdown. Same guy.
After Reggie Phillips and Jim Morrissey get touchdowns, you figure that maybe, yeah, they can find one for 34.
And Henry Wachter got a safety.
Yeah, but the year before, they lost in the championship game, and they had that Walter sitting on the bench, his head in his hands, and it's like he knew he was never going to win a Super Bowl. That was his last chance. And then the next year, they're just unbeatable. And the Minnesota game, when Jim McMahon came back, that was the most unbelievable, amazing thing. And you knew from that point on that it was just all Bears. The other one was that they played Dallas, and they beat them, I think it was 44-0. And you could hear a pin drop. It's just the Bears beating the crap out of Dallas. That was extraordinary, because,
wow,
the Cowboys were still the Cowboys.
The idea of the Bears being a dominant force is a...
The most dominant force.
No, I know.
Incredible.
It's a tough thing for me to imagine.
What this city,
you know,
would be like. What this bar would be like.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's what we all hope for. It's like the one thing that like unifies the sports city. But even the Lovey team, the, you know, 2005, like it was... The defense was good. It had Urlacher. It was amazing.
Right.
Hester's in the Hall of Fame. Like,
right,
there are all-timers on that team, obviously. I mean, Hester's was my favorite Bear, you know what I mean? But, like, of my lifetime, I've said it before, like, I don't remember Walter. I obviously don't remember Gale Sayers. So until Justin Fields came along, Devin Hester is the most exciting Bear with the ball in his hand in my lifetime. Like, he's awesome, but he's a kick returner. Like, it's not how it's supposed to be.
People rooted for the Bears to lose the toss back before the deferral became.
Right.
People always wanted to start the game on defense,
right?
Because that was the identity. That they would come out there. You didn't. Okay, we'll get around to the offense.
I will say though that there were moments inside of that run though. Remember in 06, Rex Grossman was the offensive player of the month in September. I want to say his passer rating was like 110 or something for the four games that he played. And they had Thomas Jones, and they had Cedric Benson.
Thomas Jones was great.
There are still Bears fans who are angry to this day that Thomas Jones was moved aside for Cedric Benson. Thomas Jones, this is a rough day for him. I've talked with him, and he's like, he does not watch the Super Bowl because of what happened in Miami, that he can't bring himself to watch. He's like, I always end up in the gym on Super Bowl Sunday during the game because I can't watch it. I can't watch someone else win knowing how close that Bears team was to winning it.
They were without Tommy Harris
and Mike Brown.
I mean, think about that. Much better they would have been in that game with those two guys.
Watching from afar, there was a respect for Rex Grossman if you watched enough college football to know that he was a capable quarterback. And Cedric Benson, obviously, where I'm from, you knew exactly what he could do.
Right.
But, you were screaming for Devin Hester. That was it. You couldn't wait to watch him attempt anything because you were hoping that he would be near the ball. So that was the best moment. Everybody, I feel like, was watching for Hester that season.
This is Zach's story, but I'll try to do it justice. The Bears went down. I think they played Houston. And there's a security guard there. There's a Texas Ranger there that's shaking as he walks up to Cedric Benson to shake his hand. And Zach is standing there, and he goes, "What's that about?" And Cedric Benson, is like, "He's seen me play." and then you realize, the enormity of what Cedric Benson's career at Texas. From the time that he was in eighth grade, people talking about him as being the guy.
It was also that was the last bastion of big boy West Texas football, too. That's the Midland Odessa Permian leftovers. That's before everybody. He represented a lot to us. We had heard about him from high school, and that was something that you just didn't see very often.
Look at the specter.
I just got to tell quickly. I asked him one time about playing at Texas and what it was like. And he said that Matthew McConaughey was at every game and that he would, if you scored a touchdown, he would, jump on the pile and you could smell whiskey off of him. And he said, imagine that, saying words for a living, acting. And I was like, okay.
That's incredible.
Look at the identity of all these good Bears teams we're talking about. Defense. Mm-hmm. Every single one. Defense. The best quarterback is McMahon. And we all know that that defense still hated McMahon, even with everything. So
everybody hated McMahon.
Yeah, it's true.
But we're going to be our next president.
That was my dude.
Didn't you hear the show?
That's right.
That was my dude. That, you can't say nothing bad about Jimmy Mack to me.
When we come back, you heard about the Bears-specific Radio Row Super Bowl memories. But any of those of us who have spent time in that menagerie have many others. So we'll share those when we return to the Circa Illinois Big Game Watch Party at Benchmark in Old Town, 1510 North Wells. Still plenty of time to come out and say, hey, you've got the score.
There's your Super Bowl grabber for me anyway, San Francisco and New England. What are you doing for the Super Bowl this year, grabber?
Still working on things.
Okay, so you're invited over, man.
Still working on things that I'm not at liberty to talk about yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you going someplace? Maybe? You're going.
Not at liberty to talk about.
You might be going to the Super Bowl.
Not at liberty to talk.
Oh. Who's singing at the Super Bowl this year?
That would be Bruno Mars.
You're going to the Super Bowl. Bruno, over here. Where did you learn your dance move? All right, so you're going to the Super Bowl.
I am not at liberty to tell. Will you drop it? I'm dead serious.
Because there was some scam. That's why.
That was famously Mark Grody ruining the whatever surprise Les Grobstein had arranged for himself through probably some unsavory channels to allow himself to attend the Super Bowl.
He was busy cobbling miles together from eight different airlines facilitate the trip.
How many times do I have to tell you, working overnights, there is a code, okay? If you work late night or overnight, you're the only ones working. You got guys, all right?
That's the
you
America.
Got some connects.
And I'm not at liberty to say. I can't say. I think Grody just busted him.
He was generally peeved. I mean, that was real.
That was real. Yeah, this is the Circa Illinois Big Game Watch Party at Benchmark in Old Town. And I think as we remember Radio Row experiences, and I heard him coming in because he's now an Odyssey NFL insider, but I think it's the only time I've ever done a full hour of my own show drunk.
Just 1 hour.
The first hour of the show, we were out all night. You were there, Lawrence. It was in Houston.
No, I was not. I was not in Houston.
Well, then it, no. Are you sure?
Yes, I'm
I don't remember.
He was
much.
Are you
one,
sure?
You're the drunk yeah. one.
Because Dan Zampillo
Z was probably
was
there,
with
but
us.
I wasn't.
And the night started out fine, and then it kept going.
That's how these things happen.
And it ended up being a really contentious interview with Brian Baldinger because I was mad at him for at the end of the during the Brock Forcey game when Brock Forcey ran for over 100 yards, he was saying, "This is why you can't fire Dick Geron." And I basically started the interview by saying, "What's wrong with you? How could you possibly use anything that happened in that game and had to have anything to do with whether or not you keep Dick Geron? Like, what kind of stupidity is that?" And he's like, "I didn't know it was going to be this kind of interview." I'm like, "Well, I didn't either."
I didn't either because I'm not sober.
Right. I'm not doing very well. And I talked about it with him later about how that went. And I told him the story about what the situation was. And it ended up being a great show. And I think we had Rich Eisen on talking about the fledgling NFL Network. They had just debuted the NFL Network. And I think Eisen got mad at me because I asked him a question like, why should we expect that you're going to be objective when you're working for the league?
Every Bernsey story ends with somebody getting mad at
me. Somebody mad at me, right.
So well, at least so those are the memorable ones.
The first time I was ever at Radio Row was working for Sporting News Radio. It was the game in Arizona when the undefeated Patriots ended up getting beaten by the Giants. And I was out there, and Sporting News, in their generosity, decided to send me the evening host. And so Radio Row hopping during the day, just happening. At night, nobody there whatsoever. So I was essentially alone, the only broadcaster at a table.
Not some random brain-dead NFLer selling medicines?
Nothing. No? Nothing.
Okay. You had tape interviews during the day?
Yeah, I taped interviews during the day. Yeah. That's what I taped with. I taped with Drew Rosenhaus, who was there with the Burger King. So I taped that interview, which I thought was very good. Thank you for noticing. And I taped, unfortunately, with Jared from Subway at that Super Bowl.
So far you've had Michael Jackson as a kid,
right,
and Jared from Subway.
But so you know, but you had, I had a great time. I replayed stuff, talked about stuff, whatever. I interviewed the woman who was cleaning the floors there at Radio Row. And I asked a Sporting News colleague if they would mind coming over. And Mike Mulligan, a Sporting News radio colleague, a little bit at the time, Mike, or had you previously been?
I had previously worked
at
the Sporting.
So I asked you, he came over and did like an hour with me.
We had a lot of fun.
Oh, my God. It was incredible. I was like, it was like my one live guest of the entire week was me and Mully at like 9 o'clock at night, and we had an awesome time just talking ball, hanging out, whatever. And that was really kind and generous of you during a Super Bowl week, and we had a great time.
I was still a sports writer then, and I was, you know, you got to write ahead and work on stuff. So I was just sitting in the hotel room writing, and I just walked across the street, and you're there, and we sat down, and we had a great time.
It was delightful.
And it was a beautiful break. Clear your mind, go back and finish your stuff. It was wonderful.
I've only done Radio Row once, and I feel like I love radio so much, but I was just born too late. Like, I missed the heyday of the salaries and the all of the trips and all of that stuff. But so we went.
But you were there for the El Tapatio food drop.
I was there for that.
I was not, and I am jealous.
It was incredible.
Yeah, you missed out.
Yeah, I heard. I saw. Thanks.
2014 in Arizona, the Seahawks Patriots Super Bowl where they didn't give the ball to Beast Mode, but. I mean, so many things in just 1 week. Like, whether it was my old producer, Ben Heisler, getting to do his impressions for Frank Caliendo. J.B. Smoove was the Radio Row or the Media Day correspondent for the Rich Eisen show, but then wasn't set to come to Radio Row. We found his publicist, called them, and this was before, like, it had really blown up. He had just done one season of Curb, and he was like, yeah, I'll come to Radio Row if you pay for my Uber. And I was like, yeah, I'll pay for your Uber. And so we paid for J.B. Smoove's Uber, and he came, and Curb was huge, and everyone was like, J.B., J.B., like, Fox Sports Radio was trying to get him, all these, like, huge shows were trying to get him. He was like, no, I'm loyal to Kansas City. And he just walked past all of the shows and came and did 25 minutes with us at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. I'm like a diehard Curb fan.
Good for him.
And it was, and then we had to pay for his Uber out. And so from 5 to 5:25, he did it with us. Then he did, like, two other interviews and then left with us at 6 o'clock. He called my then-girlfriend. We're watching Curb. Called Steph on the phone. She didn't answer. Left her a voicemail. Said, hey, Stephanie, it's J.B. Smoove. I'm on my way home, honey. And, like, hung up the phone. Like, unbelievable. We were Joe Hayden's bodyguard sat down at our table and thought that we were funny as Joe Hayden was doing some interview. And he was like, you guys got to come to this party that we're throwing tonight at the W Hotel in Scottsdale. And it was the Suits and Sneakers party with Odell Beckham and Joe Hayden as the hosts. And we had a great time. We had a great time.
I don't know if anything will ever top the first Super Bowl I covered. It was Super Bowl 30. In 96 in Phoenix, and McNeil and Boers, I don't know how this happened, but they had Tom Flores and Bill Walsh on at the same time.
What?
Wow.
Talking football.
Wow.
And his talking the Super Bowl in history, and you just I walked over and just
man
there they were. He was walking by and they flagged down Bill and Flores flagged and he said, sure, I'll put a headset on. And they just, that again, was like 20 minutes, 25 minutes
amazing.
Of them just talking.
I just was, as a listener, always hoping for a fight. That's all I wanted.
Usually when the score would show up at these things, there was someone that was going, like, you know, Michael Strahan or anyone else that Mac would have to go outside against. I remember from the Radio Row experience, obviously, what happened with our 5 o'clock Bears hit. I also remember just being out on South Beach and being like, don't you have a curfew? I know you have a
Don't
curfew.
You have a game to play this
Don't you
weekend?
Have a game to play?
Mr. Long Snapper.
Vegas might be a truth teller in that respect as well.
They're all off the strip.
I'm a Mr. No Will Linebacker.
Mr. Defensive End, Mr. Starting Running Back. There were a lot of guys out there drinking Landshark that week.
No one's done a runner at this Super Bowl. No one's gotten arrested last night. We haven't heard anything.
The Genie Rob.
What? This Super Bowl,
this
Dan.
That's a big win for Vegas that there hasn't been a Pac-Man Jones at the All-Star game incident.
Wouldn't you think that this would be the perfect
This would be
place?
The one.
They're staying 25 miles off the strip. Yeah. Both teams are like no gambling, like even table games, and they're being forced to stay way off the strip by their teams. We are live at Benchmark, 1510 North Wells. Benchmark, by the way, get out here in the next hour. Benchmark is registering people for a shot to win a trip to Circa.
Let's go.
Three nights, $1,000 at stadium, swim, transportation. Wow. Pretty ridiculous. There is a Bears quarterback report from Schefter out today, and we'll talk about when the Bears are getting into the next game, the big game, not the next game. The next game will be probably the Hall of Fame game in Canton. Come see us. It is The Score with Circa at Benchmark on, The Score.
There's your Super Bowl grabber for me anyway, San Francisco and New England. What are you doing for the Super Bowl this year, grabber?
Wanna
come over?
Still working on things.
Okay, you're invited over, man.
Still working on things that I'm not at liberty to talk about yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you going someplace? Maybe? You're going.
Not at liberty to talk about.
You might be going to the Super Bowl.
Not at liberty to talk.
Oh. Who's singing at the Super Bowl this year?
That would be Bruno Mars.
You're going to the Super Bowl.
Bruno, over here. Where did you learn your dance move? All right, so you're going to the Super Bowl.
I am not at liberty to tell. Will you drop it? I'm dead serious.
Because there was some scam. That's why.
That was famously Mark Grody ruining the whatever surprise Les Grobstein had arranged for himself through probably some unsavory channels to allow himself to attend the Super Bowl.
He was busy cobbling miles together from 8 different airlines facilitate the trip.
How many times do I have to tell you, working overnights, there is a code, okay? If you work late night or overnight, you're the only ones working. You got guys, all right?
That's the
you
Omerta.
You got some connects.
And I'm not at liberty to say. I can't say. I think Grody just busted him.
He was generally peeved. I mean,
that was real.
Oh, that was real.
That was real. Yeah. Yeah, this is the Circa Illinois Big Game Watch Party at Benchmark in Old Town. And I think as we remember Radio Row experiences, and I heard him coming in because he's now an Odyssey NFL insider, but I think it's the only time I've ever done a full hour of my own show drunk.
Just 1 hour.
The first hour of the show, we were out all night. You were there, Lawrence. It was in Houston.
No, I was not. I was not in Houston.
Well, then are you sure?
Yes, I'm
I don't remember.
He was
much.
Are you sure?
You were the drunk one.
Because Dan Zampillo
Z was probably was there, but I wasn't.
And the night started out fine, and then it kept going.
That's how these things happen.
And it ended up being a really contentious interview with Brian Baldinger because I was mad at him for at the end of the during the Brock Forcey game when Brock Forcey ran for over 100 yards. He was saying, "This is why you can't fire Dick Geron." And I basically started the interview by saying, "What's wrong with you? How could you possibly use anything that happened in that game and had to have anything to do with whether or not you keep Dick Geron? Like, what kind of stupidity is that?" And he's like, "I didn't know it was going to be this kind of interview." I'm like, "Well, I didn't either."
I didn't either because I'm not sober.
Right. I'm not doing very well. And I talked about it with him later about how that went. And I told him the story about what the situation was. And it ended up being a great show. And I think we had Rich Eisen on talking about the fledgling NFL Network. They had just debuted the NFL Network. And I think Eisen got mad at me because I asked him a question like, why should we expect that you're going to be objective when you're working for the league?
Every Bernsey story ends with somebody getting mad.
Somebody mad at me, right.
So at least those are the memorable ones.
The first time I was ever at Radio Row was working for Sporting News Radio. It was the game in Arizona when the undefeated Patriots ended up getting beaten by the Giants. And I was out there, and Sporting News, in their generosity, decided to send me the evening host. And so Radio Row hopping during the day, just happening. At night, nobody there whatsoever. So I was essentially alone, the only broadcaster at a table.
Not some random brain-dead NFLer selling medicines?
Nothing.
Okay. You had tape interviews during the day?
Yeah, I taped interviews during the day. Yeah. That's what I taped with. I taped with Drew Rosenhaus, who was there with the Burger King. So I taped that interview, which I thought was very good. Thank you for noticing. I taped, unfortunately, with Jared from Subway at that Super Bowl.
So far you've had Michael Jackson as a kid,
right,
and Jared from Subway.
But so you know, but you had, I had a great time. I replayed stuff, talked about stuff, whatever. I interviewed the woman who was cleaning the floors there at Radio Row. And I asked a Sporting News colleague if they would mind coming over. And Mike Mulligan, a Sporting News Radio colleague, a little bit at the time, Mike, or had you previously been?
I had previously worked
at
the Sporting.
So I asked you, he came over and did like an hour with me.
A lot of fun.
Oh, my God. It was incredible. I was like, it was like my one live guest of the entire week was me and Mully at like 9 o'clock at night, and we had an awesome time just talking ball, hanging out, whatever. And that was really kind and generous of you during a Super Bowl week, and we had a great time.
I was still a sports writer then, and I was, you know, you got to write ahead and work on stuff. So I was just sitting in the hotel room writing, and I just walked across the street, and you're there, and we sat down, and we had a great time.
It was delightful.
And it was a beautiful break. Clear your mind, go back, and finish your stuff. It was wonderful.
I've only done Radio Row once, and I feel like I love radio so much, but I was just born too late. Like, I missed the heyday of the salaries and the all of the trips and all of that stuff. But so we went.
But you were there for the El Tapatio food drop.
I was there for that.
I was not, and I am jealous.
It was incredible.
Yeah, you missed out.
Yeah, I heard. I saw. Thanks.
2014 in Arizona, the Seahawks-Patriots Super Bowl where they didn't give the ball to Beast Mode. But, I mean, so many things in just 1 week. Like, whether it was my old producer, Ben Heisler, getting to do his impressions for Frank Caliendo. J.B. Smoove was the Radio Row or the Media Day correspondent for the Rich Eisen show, but then wasn't set to come to Radio Row. We found his publicist, called them, and this was before, like, it had really blown up. He had just done one season of Curb, and he was like, yeah, I'll come to Radio Row if you pay for my Uber. And I was like, yeah, I'll pay for your Uber. And so we paid for J.B. Smoove's Uber, and he came, and Curb was huge, and everyone was like, J.B., J.B., like, Fox Sports Radio was trying to get him, all these, like, huge shows were trying to get him. He was like, no, I'm loyal to Kansas City. And he just walked past all of the shows and came and did 25 minutes with us at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. I'm like a diehard Curb fan.
Good for him.
And it was, and then we had to pay for his Uber out. And so from 5 to 5:25, he did it with us. Then he did, like, two other interviews and then left with us at 6 o'clock. He called my then-girlfriend. We're watching Curb. Called Steph on the phone. She didn't answer. Left her a voicemail. Said, hey, Stephanie, it's J.B. Smoove. I'm on my way home, honey. And, like, hung up the phone. Like, unbelievable. We were Joe Hayden's bodyguard sat down at our table and thought that we were funny as Joe Hayden was doing some interview. And he was like, you guys got to come to this party that we're throwing tonight at the W Hotel in Scottsdale. And it was the Suits and Sneakers party with Odell Beckham and Joe Hayden as the hosts. And we had a great time. We had a great time.
I don't know if anything will ever top the first Super Bowl I covered. It was Super Bowl 30 in 96 in Phoenix. And McNeil and Boers, I don't know how this happened, but they had Tom Flores and Bill Walsh on at the same time.
What?
Wow.
Talking football.
Wow.
And his talking the Super Bowl and history, and you just I walked over and just
man,
there they were. He was walking by and they flagged down Bill and Flores flagged. And he said, sure, I'll put a headset on, and they just that again it was like 25 minutes.
Amazing.
Of them just talking.
I just was, as a listener, always hoping for a fight. That's all I wanted.
Usually when the score would show up at these things, there was someone that was going, like, you know, Michael Strahan or anyone else that Mac would have to go outside against. I remember from the Radio Row experience, obviously, what happened with our 5 o'clock Bears hit. I also remember just being out on South Beach and being like, don't you have a curfew? I know you have a
don't
curfew.
You have a game to play this
don't you
week?
Have a game to play?
Mr. Long Snapper.
Vegas might be a truth teller in that respect as well.
They're all off the strip.
I'm a Mr. Will linebacker.
Mr. Defensive End, Mr. Starting Running Back. There were a lot of guys out there drinking Landshark that week.
No one's done a runner at this Super Bowl. No one's gotten arrested last night. We haven't heard anything.
The Genie Rob.
What? This Super Bowl,
a big win for Vegas that there hasn't been a Pac-Man Jones at the All-Star
exactly.
Game incident.
Wouldn't you think that this would be the perfect
this would be
place?
The one.
They're staying 25 miles off the strip. Yeah. Both teams are like, no gambling, like even table games, and they're being forced to stay way off the strip by their teams. We are live at Benchmark, 1510 North Wells. Benchmark, by the way, get out here in the next hour. Benchmark is registering people for a shot to win a trip to Circa.
Let's go.
Three nights, $1,000 at stadium, swim, transportation. Wow. Pretty ridiculous. There is a Bears quarterback report from Schefter out today, and we'll talk about when the Bears are getting into the next game. The big game, not the next game. The next game will be probably the Hall of Fame game in Canton. Come see us. It is The Score with Circa at Benchmark on, The Score. It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.